A whole gang of media snoopers, including Jonathan Marks, scans from D.C. to daylight every Thursday here on Radio Netherlands. Their super-duper whopper-doppler-receiver gizmos pick out the essence of what's happening in the world of international broadcasting. Radio Netherlands, we have the technology.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
By shortwave and satellite, this is the Dutch International Service. And now, a special Asian edition of Media Network, the weekly communications magazine from Radio Netherlands, produced and presented by Jonathan Marks.
Yes, we're going to do something different this week. As you may have heard, Radio Netherlands' English department is planning a focus on South Asia month in February. We've sent four producers to the Indian subcontinent to gather material which will be aired throughout next month in East of Edam, Research File, Towards 2000 and the documentary slot on Wednesdays. Other programmes next month will also have a subcontinental flavour. The media scene in South Asia is evolving so quickly with the advent of satellite television, we've decided to broadcast our look at the revolution in the subcontinent right now.
I think it's an even more significant change in this country than the winning of independence from the British. Because the winning of independence from the British, as Gandhi had pointed out, was limited to a bunch of people who were constitutionalists and rich lawyers and rich businessmen and all of that thing. This one is enfranchising people who are completely disempowered all these 40 years of independence. It says, okay, my friend, like, what do you want to see? And that is a far more significant change than independence could have been.
On the Star TV network, you're with Star Plus.
Satellite television made its grand entrance in the subcontinent in the wake of the Gulf War 2.5 years ago. Based in Hong Kong, the Star Television Network started beaming five channels to over 40 countries, from Turkey right across to Australia. One of the channels is in Chinese, all the others are in English. Star Plus, for instance, which provides viewers with a steady diet of the bold and the beautiful, Neighbours, Oprah Winfrey and the like. BBC World Service Television, which broadcasts news on the hour, as well as a selection of shows from the UK domestic service. Then there's Prime Sports. And finally, MTV, which feeds special programmes from Hong Kong for the Asian continent, some of them in a mixture of Chinese and English.
Tell us your favourite MTV video and we'll play it.
Richard Marks. Cool in the game.
Plus, if we like your call, you just might end up on the air. Watch the show, call the number, put up or shut up.
I have a problem. 我有一个很大的问题. In Mandarin now. 我有一个很大的问题. 什么问题呢? 就是 why do people write diaries or journals? Right? 为什么要写那个日记? Like, yeah, exactly. Why do people write these things anyway? It's like, you know, they have their, they write whatever they think about anybody, for example. Like, I don't
One of the latest newcomers to the Asian satellite market is ZTV, a Hindi language channel. It started broadcasting 3 days a week in October 1992, but has grown tremendously since then. Anu Prana is ZTV's press spokesperson.
ZTV is the first satellite Hindi channel relayed from Hong Kong. It's an Indian channel. It's going across 42 countries throughout Asia. It's the first private channel in India, introducing totally new concepts for the Indian viewer, from talk shows, game shows, discussions. People were starved for entertainment. The only kind of entertainment that people had before in India was films. And ZTV's introduced something totally new, totally non-film based, intelligent entertainment.
Chakravyu, aapka apna manch hai. Agar aap Chakravyu mein hissa lena chahte hain, to hame is pate par likhein. Chakravyu, Z Telefilms Limited, Post Box Number 6589, Bombay 18.
What constitutes intelligent entertainment is debatable. but you can't argue with the ratings of ZTV and the other satellite broadcasters. Since they were switched on in Asia in 1991, huge numbers of viewers have turned off state-run TV channels and turned instead to the satellite. Professor J.S. Yadava, the director of the Indian Institute of Mass Communication in New Delhi, has carried out several surveys on viewer patterns in India.
People are watching longer time the television. The choices are there. Even the children, you see, I mean, they watch much longer. So if the earlier average works about 2 hours a day, now it must be working out 4 hours, 5 hours a day. But it has some adverse effect also, especially in the younger generations. They go to bed late in the evening. They don't get up early in the morning for their schools. So the disadvantages are there. But at the same time, I would say it provides enormous exposures to the world.
No one really knows how many people have access to the satellite today in Asia. Press releases vary. In India alone, though, over 40 million homes have their own dish or are hooked up to one of the thousands of local cable systems that have sprouted up across the country. A cable connection costs about $30, and the subscription rates average around $3 to $6 a month. It may seem like a lot of money in a country where the average monthly salary is $30 a month, but even people we spoke to who earn just that have dipped into their savings and got cable.
Good evening and welcome to the news. The main points tonight: Prime Minister dedicates to the nation the Guruvayur-Thrissur railway line, the entire railway network to be converted into broad gauge within 10 years. The Mahasamadhi of the late Paramacharya of the Kanchi.
Given the programming provided by India's state-run broadcaster, Doordarshan, it's no wonder, says Rajiv Desai, the president of the Indian Public Affairs Network, an advertising agency based in Delhi.
Doordarshan has never been very effectively either a public broadcaster or a commercial broadcaster. It has historically been and been seen to be an arm of the government. It's been involved in very crude propaganda, government propaganda. And furthermore, it's also been involved in what you might call politically correct programming. For example, they would show entertainment programs which would have, for example, a message in it of communal harmony, unity, all of that kind of stuff, which as long as people had that only one channel to watch, they watched it. But starting 91, they had an option. They deserted it in droves. So I think Doordarshan is not a viable proposition, period. It should be disbanded, its equipment should be sold, and I think that people should just forget about this government broadcasting network.
Most Indians express the same views as Mr. Desai, though perhaps not as forcefully. When we asked Indians about what they thought of Doordarshan, most just shook their heads or chuckled as if it was a bad inside joke, like this rickshaw driver we met in Delhi.
Well, Doordarshan channels are okay for some programs which are concerned with the social activities, you know, but they are not so interested, you know. The life is so fast and so advanced. People want something fast and advanced things, you know, which Doordarshan cannot produce, you know, in television, you know.
According to a survey carried out by the Indian Institute of Mass Communication, 15% of households which have access to satellite TV have simply stopped watching Doordarshan. Professor Yadava, who heads the institute, says part of the reason has to do with Doordarshan's boring programmes.
That is true, because so far they were not challenged, you see. They were boring because there was no threat. You were in monopoly. But that situation doesn't exist anymore.
Rajiv Desai of the Indian Public Affairs Network says the steady, massive increase in the number of satellite viewers is not only due to Doordarshan's stale diet. People don't identify with the state broadcaster at all. Even the stilted language it uses alienates the viewers.
This idiotic, bureaucratic, Sanskritized Hindi that is bounced off on Doordarshan, which nobody understands. I understand Hindi, but I don't understand what they're saying in the news because they concoct words. You know, very much like what the Stalinists did with the Russian language. They created a whole new artificial, stilted language from the language of Tolstoy and Dostoevsky. This is what they've done to Hindi in Doordarshan, and specifically in Doordarshan. But it's part of the government culture, as I call it. But yes, if you see ZTV, it's wonderful. You see this woman talking in Hindi and then suddenly lapses into English, just as any average Indian guy does. Any sort of educated Indian guy does that. He switches back and forth totally unconsciously.
ZTV has created viewer loyalty. It now receives over 1 million letters a week, not only from India, but also from Pakistan, where there's a huge audience. And also from as far away as the Gulf states, which have sizable Indian expat communities.
The response is incredible. We get about 10 lakh letters a week. We are inundated with letters, you know, suggestions. And actually what we want is more criticism so we can improve. We don't get enough of those letters. There's just too much adulation and too much praise. And people have identified with the channel to the extent that they're sending in letters written in their own blood. I can show you a few of those, but it's just that they're identifying so totally with the channel. It's their own channel.
In India, where 60% of the population speaks Hindi, ZTV and the other Hindi language channel, ATN, have a significant advantage over English language channels, since only 5 to 10% of Indians speak English. Yet even BBC World Service Television and Star Plus are making major inroads. Some say it's because of the novelty of foreign television, and in particular because of the glossy programmes. Doordarshan's Deputy Director General, MP Lely, says his station simply doesn't have the resources to compete with the satellite television.
We have been all along public service broadcasting, combining a good deal and fair amount, a balanced amount of entertainment, education and information. Now in the entertainment sector, naturally people compare with the glossy programs coming from the West. But I think the knowledgeable among them do understand that there are these limitations, maybe limitations of infrastructure, our own, and how much we can pay and how much expenditure one can make on such programs to make them as glossy as possible. Then it is a question of economics also. If the Hollywood things are produced, you have a worldwide market. You have a worldwide marketing strategy. That's how you recover your costs. Whereas for the Indian producer to spend that amount may not be possible. But I think ultimately there would be some kind of a pendulum. Then the equilibrium, final equilibrium come. But of course, it's a challenge.
Indeed, Doordarshan has no other choice because as Indian viewers turn away from its programmes, so too are advertisers who are prepared to shell out a bit more to have their commercials seen across Asia. But Rajiv Desai, the advertising executive, believes that even the survival instinct of Doordarshan, like any other state broadcaster, won't be enough to keep the organisation alive.
You know, at this stage, I think they are probably prepared to change. They're right, but they're inept, they're incompetent, they can't change. It's impossible for them. It's just not possible. You know, it's not a matter of resources. I'll tell you, there are two favorite buzzwords in India. One is the resource crunch, and that is what the bureaucrats talk about. And the other is poverty, which is what the politicians talk about, which both mean the same thing. Even if you threw $1 billion into Doordarshan and said, do it, they couldn't do it. The whole Indian system is such that it retards any innovative thinker, any innovative person from rising to the top. Only mediocrities and those who draw certain lines and have godfathers get to the top. I don't think Doordarshan is capable of change at this point.
Doordarshan is trying to respond to the challenge, but with mixed success. On August the 15th last year, they launched 5 new television channels via satellite to lure people away from Star. At the time, India's Prime Minister, Narasimha Rao, hailed the move as a new beginning in the development of science and technology for India. But Doordarshan has ended up with egg on its face. They didn't broadcast any logos, so viewers couldn't figure out which channel they were watching. And even when they could, they found the programmes were just as boring as the stuff being broadcast on Doordarshan's terrestrial channels. In fact, an Indian newspaper recently reported that 70% of the shows on the 5 new channels are actually reruns. Even today, 5 months after they went on the air, the screen still regularly goes blank. A few weeks ago, the Indian Information and Broadcasting Ministry announced that it was scrapping 3 of the 5 satellite channels as from February the 1st. The focus now, says Mr. Lely, will be to strengthen regional channels and improve the quality.
Any professional organization, you know how improvement comes.
improvement comes by having more number of stringers, getting faster means to bring the coverages, by better training of your news readers, and all that which is being done. The need for it has intensified, that much I can say, because you have a competitor now.
There are some key matchups this January in the NBA. See the larger-than-life stars of the world's greatest basketball with our Game of the Week, Thursdays. Starting this month, Football Mundial. You'll never miss a goal again. Get the glory, catch the pictures with a weekly update of results and news from the world of soccer. So much more in 94. Starting January on Prime Sports.
And there's more competition coming. Experts estimate that by this time next year, people in the subcontinent will be able to pick up 40 satellite channels when a second AsiaSat satellite is launched. Star Television plans to start at least one pay channel early this year.
World leaders and decision makers recognize CNN International as their main source for breaking news. CNN International is committed 24 hours a day to bringing the news to over 210 countries and territories worldwide.
One loser so far is Ted Turner's cable news network, which is currently on Arabsat, a satellite which doesn't offer good reception throughout the subcontinent. But they're looking for a better satellite, and Turner Industries may also start beaming TNT and the Cartoon Network towards Asia. Given the rather small percentage of Indians who speak English, it may seem like these satellite channels are taking real risks, if you just look at the Indian market. But Rajiv Desai disagrees. The number of English speakers in India may be small, but it still adds up to 150 million people.
There's 150 million of them, which makes India one of the largest English-speaking countries in the world. Having said that, they also tend to be demographically in the upmarket kinds of regions where they can support my advertising. They're the ones who can pay the scrambling charges for the decoder. They're the ones who can pay for the cable service. They're the ones who can make the call-ins for requests and all of that.
But the real growth sector will be broadcasting in regional languages. ZTV, which has been on the air for a little over a year now, is rapidly expanding. It currently has 12 hours on most days, but hopes to go 24 hours a day before the end of 1994. So does it also have plans to start broadcasting in other regional languages besides Hindi, or is that looking too far ahead?
No, it's not beyond the horizon, but it would be well into the future. We may look into more channels in other regional languages to reach out to the varied audience that we have in India. In other languages, maybe regional channels, yes.
On BBC, Jonathan Miller explores the meaning of madness. In Chinese Channel's Best of Asia series, the controversial leader Mao Zedong. Star Plus presents an all-star cast in The Man Upstairs. Celebrate January with the Star TV Network.
There are only a few other channels on the air at the moment which cater to other linguistic groups, including Sun TV, which broadcasts in Tamil. But since many of the regional languages in the subcontinent are spoken by millions of people, in fact, some languages have a larger number of speakers than many European languages, like Dutch. So there's clearly real potential for these type of channels. Doordarshan, too, has caught on to this.
Now, one of these channels has been earmarked for regional networking. That's one thing. Now, you have people from, say, distant parts, Tamil Nadu, in Delhi, or in Punjab, in northern India. Now, we are thinking that there could be a regional service, replica of regional service, for people anywhere in India speaking Tamil. We can share some time for them, 2 hours, 3 hours, or whatever it is. And the programs that are produced by the regional language stations can be brought, recapsuled, broadcast to them. That experiment we have already started.
And now for weather information from other parts of the world, here's CNN's Dave Hennen.
And now here's a look at your world weather forecast for Thursday. We begin, first of all, in Asia. High pressure is building into eastern sections of China. This is very cold high pressure and will continue to...
Multinational media organizations are also trying to tap into the non-English-speaking market. CNN recently announced it has plans to start a few hours a day of programming in Hindi. This proliferation of television channels, says Rajiv Desai, will have major consequences.
I think it's an even more significant change in this country than the winning of independence from the British.
MTV Most Wanted, drop us a line, make our day, and we'll definitely make yours. MTV Most Wanted, tonight at 9 p.m. Hong Kong and Taiwan, 6:30 p.m. India.
As satellite television gains an ever stronger foothold in the subcontinent, some people have been expressing mounting concern about the influence it's having on society. They say children are watching too much television, and some of the programs, especially those of MTV, have far too much sex content. India's information minister even went as far as to say that the region is facing a cultural invasion. Rajiv Desai again.
One of the responses to the satellite television has been, it's a cultural invasion. It'll destroy the moral fiber of India and all of that, our old traditional values and what have you. A, if you have a 5,000-year-old culture, MTV cannot subvert its values. The values that MTV can subvert are the values of a Doordarshan, which they should. The values that the BBC can subvert are the values of a Doordarshan, and they should subvert. The values that Star Plus can subvert are the values of Doordarshan, and they should subvert those values, because those are not Indian values. They probably came from outer space. I mean, I don't think they came from anywhere else.
Even ZTV, the Hindi channel, has come in for criticism. ZTV has broadcast talk shows on taboo subjects like sex, which have left some viewers flabbergasted. Despite India's press freedom, ZTV practices some self-censorship. Not so much as to protect its viewers, but because all its programmes have to meet the standards of Hong Kong, from where the programmes originate. So two censors are employed full-time to monitor all of ZTV's output. The media revolution in the subcontinent, welcomed by most, has created uncertainty about the chances of survival for the indigenous broadcasting industry. Rajiv Desai, despite his strong criticism of Doordarshan, says there is a place for public broadcasting in South Asia, including India.
Well, of course. In fact, if Doordarshan is to survive, to turn itself into a public broadcaster is its only option. But it's not a public broadcaster, is what I've said to you. It's a rather ham-handed and fairly crude medium to project what is politically correct. What will happen in Doordarshan eventually, that some bright spark will emerge to take this medium and convert it into a genuine public broadcasting service, perhaps with the help of public broadcasters around the world, whether, you know, Arts and Entertainment, Bravo, the Discovery Channel, PBS, Channel 4, all of these things. The guy who does it, or the group of people that do it, will have to sort of link up with these guys and say, look, fellas, we've got a broadcast network here. That is the single largest broadcast network in the world. Doordarshan is going to have to get globalized.
Whether Doordarshan opts for that strategy is still an open question. In a bid to stimulate more creative programming, Doordarshan has turned to independent producers.
Since 76, gradually, we promoted production of programs by creative people outside. And look here, India has got a very prosperous, very successful film-making industry. That is the entertainment industry. We have been taking their films, showing their films. Then we started commissioning to creative people telefilms, a new genre. Then serials, sitcoms also, documentaries also. So a lot has been done, and some of our documentaries and telefilms have won the international prizes.
But it's only been happening on a very limited basis. So is Doordarshan really prepared to open its channels to independent producers? Professor Yadava.
I think so. There's no option left for Doordarshan now. So we want those influences come, but we don't want to be swept away. That's the famous quotation of Mahatma Gandhi. We want to keep our windows and doors open so that winds of cultures flow freely, but still respond creatively.
That doesn't mean that India doesn't have anything to offer the rest of the world, argues Professor Yadava.
Take our case of All India Radio. Our classic music is kept alive by the All India Radio, classical music. And we're so rich classical music. If you can package that also as a parallel to your MTV, I think there might be a choice. Okay, this is what West offers and this is what India offers. And maybe you take something of our own, means Indians, and we take something of your own. And with these cultural interactions, a richer world culture will emerge. But if it becomes only one world and one view, I think that world will be poorer.
Maintaining the cultural identity of the countries in the region is far from the minds of most viewers, who are overwhelmed by the variety of programmes appearing on their screens. A lot of it is trash, but like the rest of the world, people in South Asia love it. For many, the real novelty is having television news on the hour, round the clock.
Keeping you in touch 24 hours a day. This is the BBC.
BBC World Service Television's largest market is Asia, and it's drawn heavily on its radio correspondents and stringers in the region to provide up-to-date, uncensored news. Like CNN, the BBC plans to heavily invest in the region, and it needs to.
Good morning. This is Business Breakfast, offering you a very warm welcome to the day with all the business and economic news from Britain and around the world.
In the next hour, the national and international news, the weather and the latest sport.
The headlines this morning. President Clinton travels to Los Angeles today to see for himself the scale of the damage.
At the moment, reports from Asia are frequently simply rebroadcast from World Service Radio without any pictures. And unimportant domestic British stories, like the closures of hospitals in London, somehow make their way into the middle of World Service Television news bulletins. That doesn't help the channel's attempts to establish itself as a rival to CNN. You can wonder how relevant some of the sports information must seem to people watching another continent away.
Good morning. Southampton's miserable season has taken another turn for the worse. Managerless, fighting relegation from the Premiership, they're now...
Neither CNN nor BBC Television provide the same type of news coverage as international radio stations. But this has yet to sink in amongst viewers in South Asia, as I heard from a regular shortwave listener in Delhi.
The fact that you want something a little more analytical, a little more in-depth, has to sink in after the visual satiety, as it were, has been reached. You know, people are still sort of reacting to the fact they can see something which is happening immediately, and they can see it on the screen. And that sort of precludes from them from asking the question, well, after that, what? That's not enough, you know. So beyond that, what is it that we're getting? And I think in that sense, the radio has a very specific niche. Because it does not bring in images, it must bring in analysis of events almost, you know, to go along with the news. And that's something which I think would be its strength.
The media revolution in Asia is certain to have profound consequences in almost every field, from social values to economics to shortwave radio. So far, the revolution has primarily affected the upper and middle classes, though it's slowly trickling down. However, Rajiv Desai says a large segment of the people in India and the rest of South Asia will be bypassed.
There are 350 million people who are abysmally poor, who can barely afford to make ends meet in this country. And I mean, it's not like poor as we understand it in the West, for example, where, I mean, they have a roof over their heads and then they're waiting in the welfare line. Here, I mean, they're out on the street looking for handouts, right? No commercial broadcaster will have any interest in catering to those people because they're not supporting anything. They probably don't even have TVs or whatever. It's a very stringent judgment. But until such time as India is able to do something to generate jobs and wealth among these people, I'm afraid they'll be left out in the cold, whether by public broadcasters or by commercial broadcasters.
Nonetheless, satellite television and cable systems are slowly expanding their tentacles across the region. Satellite channels can now be seen in most cities and towns in India and Pakistan. And Professor Yadava of the Indian Mass Media Institute says it's just a question of time before satellite TV appears in rural areas.
It will be slower penetration into the tribal and rural area because, after all, it's an economy, fact of life. How many can individually afford television? But suppose one television is there in the village and that gets linked up with the cable and satellite, so they will all have access. But not to that extent every household in India will have a television, and in urban area every bedroom will have a television. That kind of situation is yet to come. Still, there's a big market. There's likely to be a great expansion to media activities, both in terms of hardware as well as software. That's why all multinational companies are coming to Asia, because they see it as a big market.
Indeed it is. Over half the world's population lives in Asia. My thanks to Eric Beauchemin, who did all the research for that in-depth feature. Next week, shortwave wireless news from Asia, although I can tell you now that Singapore is clearly testing its new shortwave transmitters ahead of its official launch on February the 1st.
I've been doing some listening between 3 and 30 megawatts. Some people get static, some people get far-off countries. I just get a headache.
Serving the universe from Flevo, Radio Netherlands, with relays in Russia, Bonaire, and Madagascar. Any questions?
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network program. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.